Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition here of In The Zone. I'm Giancarlo Alino, joined here with Chris Martelli. Episode 195 today, jam-packed. And NHL's hockey's back. It just depends who which team you are. Some are in preseason, and if you're Nashville and San Jose, your season is on the road and in another country. So Chris, I'll start off with you on Nashville, San Jose. Do you think this them getting a little shafted here? Do you think this is good that they're in the European market and benefiting from their European players getting exposure?
Best of both worlds, but again, like, where's the communication with the hockey fans? Last night I was saying to you before the pod, you know, I rushed to watch the Leafs and Red Wings game. Like, oh, is this a regular season game? Is this the opener? And it's like, no, I see Abruzzese scoring and I see other AHL guys playing. I'm like, okay, this is a preseason game. Why are the Sharks and Predators playing a regular season game? I mean, I'll say this. It is good for, like you mentioned, the European market. They get a little more taste of what the NHL brings. You know, sometimes maybe they don't have the rights to watch it. So getting a game live obviously is great for the Czech Republic fans. You have a couple big-time names, too, that are Czech that do play for those teams. So it is great, but at the same time, man, the lack of communication can really turn a lot of fans off and turn them sour. Specifically, we just did a fantasy pool a couple nights ago. If you don't know what games are on, you don't set your lineup, you're going to be a little pissed off, especially a UC Saros start. So, I mean, there's definitely a couple fantasy owners out there that are a little bit probably peeved and cheesed, but hey, you know what? That's the NHL. It's Gary Bettman. Let him do what he wants because he's going to do what he wants. But, I mean, it's interesting that it's Nashville and San Jose. I think out of those two teams to start the regular season, I kind of would have thought, Alino, call me crazy, you go with the original six, go with maybe New York, Chicago, something like that instead of San Jose and Nashville. But, hey, I'm not bashing those franchises. You know, they're in the National Hockey League. They have great players. And the fan base is, I think they want it to grow. I think that's why they brought it to Czech Republic.
Yeah, it's also good, too. Like, Thomas Hertl goes there. That guy is a draw. All the fans. Yeah. He packed in the house over there. Just too bad he can't do that in the States for some times. But yeah. The Czech Republic, that guy's Hulk Hogan. Just getting all the ticket sales. So good for him on that. And we'll go on to some of these lines here that we're kind of talking about. Interesting bets that we're seeing. It looks like if you're going to look at the opener, one of them that really caught my eye here, Chicago and Colorado. Colorado coming off their Stanley Cup win. They also have two new goalies. They let Kemper go to free agency, goes to the Caps, and they bring in Georgiev, and they're going to take on Chicago with Patrick Kane probably playing to get the hell out of there, motivated. So do you like this at plus 320 for the Blackhawks?
Absolutely. I was saying, you know, I'm not bashing any, you know, roster players because, again, we haven't seen any of them play. But when you have Franco and Georgiev as your starting goalies, you know, the whole cup hangover is really a thing. We've seen it with so many teams in the past. And I think Chicago has something to prove, man. I know a lot of people have already written their season off with the Connor Bedard sweepstakes, you know, trading Patrick Kane potentially. But you're getting them at plus 300. I mean, with a goalie like Georgiev in net, who says Patrick Kane can't get 3 points right off the bat? Who says Seth Jones can't get a nice clapper from the points? So I really do like that. If you really are, you know, feeling a little bit more adventurous, you take the Blackhawks on the money line. I also really do like, I mean, the safer option, obviously. I think the Blackhawks on the puck line at plus 1.5 is another play that I like too. But how about that over? I think this might be a like 5-4, 5-3 type of game. We've seen so many times, sometimes, Alino, with the Colorado Avalanche, they're so offensively minded that they just completely forget about the defensive play. So, I mean, Landeskog obviously is a phenomenal defensive player, but when you have Cale Makar making those pinches, sometimes it could backfire. So I do like Chicago there on the money line, and I'd even probably take the over and the plus 1.5. I think those are the three best plays there.
Yeah, like you, I like what you mentioned there too with Landeskog being like his role on the team. I think Kadri not going and re-signing there, going to Calgary, it's going to open up some space there. And you're gonna have to fill that void for Kadri, because he did get a lot of points last year and while still playing a two-way game. So it might be tough for them to get going early on. Like, preseason's one thing. You have some guys that know they're on the roster regardless, and some that are trying to play in for a bottom six role. I like the Chicago pick. It might be one of their only important wins over a Stanley Cup champion this year. I think if they're going to take advantage of some of these teams early on, I think is where we'll see it. But Leafs and Habs is going to get a lot of attention because we're expecting a blowout at one of these teams, because Murray's in net. That can go wrong for the Leafs. Or Jake Allen's in net for Montreal. That can go bad for them. What do you like in this game?
I like the under 6.5 goals at +105. I just think, you know, Alino, we see it every year. We've watched so many Leaf home openers. There haven't been more than 5 goals in most of them. So, I mean, you know, Matt Murray and Jake Allen, like, yeah, they're not the greatest goalies, but I feel like Montreal always comes. They bring the pace. They try to level up the playing field, and I think when you're leveling up the playing field, there's not a lot of games. It's a close contested contest. And I think it's going to be, you're looking at the Leafs too without John Tavares. That's a guy that could really carry the offense too. Like, don't make no mistake about it. The guy came to the team at 47 goals. So I think without John Tavares, still trying to get that chemistry, I like the under here at +105. I just think 7 goals, it's a lot, man. It's a lot of goals. It's at the Bell Center too. So I don't see 7 goals happening at the Bell Center.
If you're going to go and, because I know it's back-to-back, they're doing the Wednesday, Thursday. Do you think Thursday would be the one where it'd be over 7 goals or over 6.5 for that one?
Yeah. I mean, again, as the games go on, the Leafs get better offensively. That's just how they've been. That's how they've rolled. You know, Marner and Matthews are just godly. And, you know, another intriguing name that I think could be a really good addition for this Leafs is Yarncroc. We saw in the preseason, he scored quite a bit. Nick Robertson's another guy too. So, I mean, that's going to be the trend, Alino, you know, taking the over for Leaf games. I think that's going to be the trend for most of the year. But I'm going to go against it for the first game. I'm going to go under for the first game, just again, like I said, for that chemistry.
I like it. And another interesting one that jumped out to me before we started recording is the Tuesday night opener in LA. They're taking on the Vegas Golden Knights, and we got plus for Vegas, and we got another plus for over 6 goals, and Jack Eichel's 100%. Phil Kessel's joining in the mix. Got Stone now 100%. Theodore, Petrangelo always show out early on in the year. And you look at LA, you got another group of young, hungry players. Kopitar's still there. I'm expecting a big scoring game. Do you think that could be something the fans can look forward to?
Absolutely. I'm wearing an LA hat, but I think this is going over. Like, you have Jonathan Quick, you have Thompson in net. This, like, another thing too, they got Kevin Fiala. This is a guy that just had 80 points. Kopitar, call me crazy, Alino. The guy doesn't age. The guy continues to just produce every single year. They're getting a healthy Drew Doughty as well, a healthy Jack Eichel, a healthy Mark Stone. There's so many healthy guys here. I think the implications are going flat out against the under here. I just think 6 goals, it's not that much, is it? Especially what we saw last year in the NHL. Like, that could happen in 2 periods. So I think the biggest X factor for that is how good Logan Thompson is. Is Logan Thompson going to come in and, you know, be a Robin Leonard 2.0, or is he going to be, you know, Jonathan Bernier, letting a couple stinkers early on? I don't know, but I'm going to go with the over, just specifically Kevin Fiala, man. I think he's going to have a hell of a debut in an LA Kings uniform.
Yeah, I like it too, just because Vegas's backup goalie, like, Robin Leonard's out, it looks like, for the year. So it's sink or swim now. Like, they got rid of Fleury just to keep Leonard when they had that duo going. And now Leonard's out and they're kind of screwed in net, wishing they probably had Fleury and didn't stab him in the back and send him out the door. But you look at LA, Jonathan Quick, it looks like he's going to start the early part of the year again. They're going to see where he is. And do you think he can have another strong year? Because I like what he did last year, where he kind of exceeded expectations. Or are you expecting the regression to a backup role?
That's a good question. I think with Jonathan Quick, you really don't know, man. Like, this is a guy that could play 60 games, maybe not have the greatest statistics, but I think they're going to do it a 50-50 approach this year. I think you maybe start Quick. Maybe by Christmas time, you ease the workload a little bit. You give it more to Cal Peterson. Cal Peterson has shown that he could be a starter, but it's a big what if. So, I mean, Jonathan Quick, first ballot Hall of Famer. The guy had like a 960 save that playoff run. So, like, he's one of the greatest I've seen individually as a goalie, athletic, everything about it. I just think, you know, after a while, man, it happens. You know, Father Time beats a lot of these guys, and I hate to say it, I think Jonathan Quick might be the next victim of goalies that kind of goes from elite starter to a nice, reliable backup.
I like it. And final game we'll look at here that's really jumping out, it seems. Edmonton, Vancouver, they got the opening, the Wednesday night, I guess prime time for the West Coast, but a little late if you're on the East Coast. I think everyone's going to stay up just to watch this first night. Connor McDavid going up against this offensive Vancouver Canucks team. You got Boudreau a full year now. You can work with those guys.
Yep.
This one's over 6.5 at plus money. Do you like this kind of line? Because I'm looking at McDavid, Draisaitl getting ready to go to town early on.
Like, this is a type of line where you think it might be a trap. Like, that's how intriguing it looks, but I got to go with the over. Like, you have Pettersson, who's going to step up this year. You have Kuzmenko, who looks, dude, he looks like a Panarin. Like, I was watching Kuzmenko the other day. He looks disgusting. You have Draisaitl, like, you have so many freaking offensive weapons. It could be a 4-goal game in the first period. So, I hope not. I have Demko in fantasy. Like, I think he's going to have a big year. But when you're going up against Connor McDavid, they went to the conference finals. The arena is going to be just absolutely just amped up. I think this is going to be a flat-out over. If I had to make a prediction on a score, I'll say 5-3, something like that in game one. I think Jack Campbell, again, this is a goalie where I'm not going to say he's a freaking Vezina type of goalie, but he has his unbelievable games, Alino, and he has his stinker games. So if you're going up against a really good offensive team off the bat in Vancouver, Pedersen's going to be really, really amped and motivated to bounce back. Because last year, dude, there were a lot of guys that said that he is not the elite player that a lot of people thought he was. So that's a lot of heat that he took last year. I think he's going to keep that in his back pocket, and I think he's going to light it up this year, I think. So I'm right there with you, man, Alino. I think Canucks Edmonton screams over, and you got to take it at plus money.
And do you think Edmonton, if they don't start off the season getting a win or even get their groove together, do you think their fan base is going to start adding a lot more pressure to the coaching staff? Because it looks like it's cup or bust again for Edmonton, especially when you got McDavid and Draisaitl on your team.
It depends. If they start like 0-5, then yeah, then that's really concerning. But first game, maybe not. Let's say they go out and they lose to Arizona in like the first week, then that's really concerning. Like, then you have to sit down with the locker room and the leadership group and say, like, what the hell's going on here? Like, we just got Jack Campbell. We got Nuge another year. We re-signed Evander Kane. Like, what the hell's going on here? We need you guys to step up. The one thing with me, Alino, with Edmonton is they have no depth. Like, their bottom six forwards to me are very, very average. And it's really sad to say, because when you have a guy like Connor McDavid, you want as much support for a guy like that. And they just don't have it. So, I mean, again, a lot of pressures on McDavid, of course. Draisaitl, of course. But I think a guy, dude, that has to really step up this game this year, if they want to be great, is Evan Bouchard. This is a guy that 8th overall pick. Comes in, immediately takes over the power play for Tyson Barrie. If Bouchard can get 50 points, Darnell Nurse can have a complete defensive game, then they're a problem. But a lot of red flags, a lot of question marks. But I do think Connor McDavid, we saw last year, man, he can do it himself. So I think if Edmonton can go, let's say the first month, 5-3-1, maybe the fan base is a little bit content, but anything under 500, man, yeah, that's a lot of pressure.
Speaking of pressure and fan bases, nice transition here to our next topic, because there was a big showdown, it looked like, in practice with the Golden State Warriors. I don't know what's going on, but Draymond Green got rubbed the wrong way by Jordan Poole, and it wasn't like a mutual fight here. It was Draymond Green committing to, okay, I'm going to punch him in the face, and we'll see how this plays out. It did not look good. There was even video released about it. When you first heard that there's a practice between the NBA champions and two of their players there that are important for their team's success are getting into a fight, what's going through your head?
I don't even know, man. Like, this was... is it bad to say I'm not surprised?
Yeah, I wasn't either.
Like, there's guys... Oh, I just got an update here. Draymond Green called Jordan Poole a bitch multiple times. All right.
Oh.
Okay. So I guess I don't know what Jordan Poole did. Maybe he was coming in a little, like you said, a little arrogant, a little cocky. Had a phenomenal year last year. One of the best. I think he was runner up or second or third place in MIP. But Jordan Poole, dude, he's a great player. He could be maybe not a franchise player, but you don't go out and practice and deck him. And like that just, I want to see what Steph Curry says. That's, to me, that's the biggest, you know, for like moving forward with the franchise. I just want to see what Steph Curry says, Steve Kerr. I don't think they've really said much yet, but dude, Draymond Green just freaking leveled him. Like, he knocked him out. He's in concussion protocol. Like, that's not okay. I don't accept any of that behavior. It's just sad to see, man, because Draymond Green, like, if you're the Warriors owner, he's been it with the team for 10 years. That's like Morgan Riley decking Nick Robertson. Like, that's not acceptable by any means. So if you're the Warriors owner, if you're Steve Kerr, if you're Steph Curry, guys that grew with Draymond Green, you have to ask them, what the hell's going through your mind? Do you want out? And, dude, honestly, in my honest opinion, I think he wants to go play with LeBron James.
Oh, man. Like, yeah, I'm with you. Like, if the owner, like, they have to step in here, because maybe Draymond Green saw The Last Dance and it's like, I want to try being Michael Jordan. I'm going to fight my smaller teammate like Steve Kerr did. But there's a difference there. He didn't just lunge at him. Like, when they were telling the story, it seemed like Steve Kerr wanted to scrap Michael Jordan too. He had enough. Like, this was like all Draymond Green going, no, I want to fight. He clearly is like just pushing me away. I'm going to lunge at him. And this is just a bad look. Like, here's a video of it that I found on Twitter. So you see them, hey, talking back and forth, something going on. And then Draymond Green comes up, not liking what he sees. And just gets in his face. Jordan Poole just pushes him, like, get it out, and boom. Like, I don't know what the hell he was thinking, but like you said, he's in concussion protocol. If the NBA doesn't get in, NBAPA, I'm sure, is going to have to get in the union. Like, is Draymond Green even playing the first 10, 15 games of the year?
If you're trying to send a message, no. Like, the guy should maybe miss 20 games. But this, again, it's a tough situation because he's been with the team, dude, for 10 years. Like, this is not a five-year vet. This is not a second fiddle type of guy. This is a guy that has helped them win four titles. Four. Like, it's tough because you don't know what's going through his mind. You don't know if he maybe is a little jealous of Poole, you know, getting a little more attention. Draymond Green has never been that offensive player. He's the Rodman of the Warriors. But we never saw Rodman going out and knocking out Pippen or knocking out one of the hotshot guards that were on the way up. So Draymond Green has a podcast. I don't know how this is going to work out. This is a very puzzling thing that's going around, Alino. I think you should suspend him 20 games. I think they should fine him a considerable amount of money, like, whether it's the NBA Players Association, whether it's the Warriors. Somebody has to jump into action here. And if I had to guess a number, man, honestly, I'd say $250K. I know it doesn't seem like a lot, but it's got to be a hefty fine, because that is just absolutely unacceptable. We just saw in the video, what did Poole do? It looked like he didn't even say anything to him. What, he just gets in his face. If you got in my face, like very close, I would probably do what Poole did. I just kind of push you back and be like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it seemed like he was trying to it was like he was trying to de-escalate everything. It's like, yeah, okay, Draymond Green, like just back up, like just cool off or something. It looked like Draymond Green had every intent to start a fight with Poole. And it didn't look like Poole had any intention of like doing anything, because he recognizes who the player is, and it looked like he just wanted nothing of the situation, and hopefully Draymond cooled off. But yeah, that's a bad look now that the video came out.
What that video symbolizes, dude, is honestly, he knows who Draymond Green is. Everybody knows who Draymond Green is. Everybody knows who Patrick Beverley is. Everybody knows the hotheads in the league. And that video shows right there that Jordan Poole knew that Draymond Green is the guy that escalates everything. He kicked LeBron James in the nuts in 2016 in the finals. People forget that. So Draymond has had a lot of episodes of really bad behavior. And you see there, Jordan Poole knew. He had his distance. He knew. And he sees Draymond walk up. And they say, all right, you know what? It's probably coming. He pushes him back. And he probably didn't think he would knock him out. But, you know, he maybe thought, you know, they were going to get into a verbal spat. But just docks him without any warning. And you see even the thing that really concerned me was Steph Curry didn't even like turn around. Like, I don't even know, I feel like he didn't even know what was going on. So I think, dude, we're talking about like Zion Williamson losing weight. We're talking about being excited for a lot of couple other, you know, acquisitions for other teams like Deshaunte Murray to Atlanta. This one might steal the cake for the most attention going into the year, and that's not a good look for the NBA.
And it's not like a situation where, oh, okay, they haven't won a championship ever. Like, they're bringing this group. This is like all this pressure on them. They just won the championship with this group, and Poole played a big role, and so did Draymond Green. And it's like, what the hell happened in the summer that they're all of a sudden Draymond Green doesn't like Jordan Poole?
I heard also it was like with Andrew Wiggins too. Like, something was going on. I think, dude, I hate to say this because I'm not in the NBA. I don't know anything about how they interact with each other, but got to remember, Alino, all three of those guys are up for an extension, all three of them. So maybe that had something to do with it. Money, the root of all evil. I don't know, man. Like, that, when you look at it, like, Poole's an up and coming guy that could, like, let's say next year, dude, he averages more than Thompson. Like, he'll get like 22 and Thompson gets 20. Draymond Green is probably going to defend Klay Thompson and say, if you want to get rid of Klay Thompson, you're out of your mind. You're not going to win another title. But Andrew Wiggins is a guy that he locked down Jaylen Brown. He locked down Jason Tatum. He's the humble guy. You never hear Andrew Wiggins' name in any beef. What beef is Andrew Wiggins in? The only beef he's in is at McDonald's. There's not no other beef. So Draymond Green is the culprit here, dude. He's the guy that has to get it all. And Jordan Poole was the villain a couple months ago. So it's great how the tables turn.
And long term, I guess, like, do you think this is going to lead to maybe their team not performing well? Like, this is going to just carry over, the morale of the team's going to go down? Or do you think they're like low key expecting Draymond to get traded so they can just like get this out of the way?
I would say the second option for sure, but it's Steph Curry. He doesn't take losing very well. So I think, like, you have Wiseman, you have Kuminga, you have Poole, you know, you have these Klay Thompson, dude, he's going to be motivated too. You think he liked how he played? No. So you have a lot of guys that are going to be motivated to play well. Kuminga and Wiseman. Dude, Wiseman looked actually phenomenal in the preseason. So I don't know if, like, it's going to affect how, like, the results on the court, but we're going to see the first couple games. They're definitely going to be a little more hesitant, I think, to play make, to vocalize. I think you're going to see a lot of head down type of basketball, not a lot of communication. But this is where Steve Kerr comes in, who's, you said it perfectly, he's had that fight with Jordan. He has that experience. He could easily vocalize with the team before the game. let's put all that bullshit aside. We just won the championship. We have one of the best players, Steph Curry. Let's go out and do it. So they're in a good spot, man, honestly. Like, if it was any other coach other than Steve Kerr, I would say this is a much worse situation. But you bringing up Steve Kerr getting into that fight with Michael Jordan, that just makes this situation feel a little bit more of a sponge type situation, which is, it's going to alleviate pressure off the Warriors.
And if you're Steve Kerr, that's like, he's looking at the staff there that he trusts with the video and all that stuff, social media. For this to get out, there's somebody on the team now that he has to second guess everything that goes on in practice. You think he's got to get rid of everybody and just bring in and really have a strict protocol? Or is this even a good look that at least people know what's really going on the team, that they always judge, oh, okay, this guy's not playing well, and now they know the reason why?
I think it's that's the cons of social media, man. If you're going to have people in attendance at training camp and at, you know, practices, you got to understand that sometimes people break protocols, and it's unfortunate. I don't know if it was a trainer, if it was a fan, I'm not really sure, but he's going to have to sit down with his whole staff and say, like, listen, we're in a black cloud right now. We've had a lot of highs and lows in this franchise, and we just got to get over it. And I think it's up again, like, the owner has a lot of homework to do. Like, he has to look into the situation. He has to look at the trainer who recorded it. It's just going to be a nightmare, man. And I think, yeah, like, this is a team that, can they really afford to fire a lot of guys? Probably. They just won the championship. So it wouldn't really hurt them, I think, to really go a different approach. Don't you think? Like, we saw 2 years ago, they drafted Wiseman and they won a chip a year later. So I think if there is a franchise out there that can do it, that could be hesitant and ballsy and fire some guys, I think it is Golden State.
I have to keep an eye on that one, because that's going to probably be a story that goes on and drags on until they take action publicly. Because if the video didn't come out and maybe word got out, oh, there was a little bit of a fight in practice, got it downplayed and said, oh yeah, they were just like pushing and shoving, someone threw a punch, but cool heads prevailed. Now with the video out, you can't really say that and downplay it and say, oh yeah, everything's good now, it was nothing. It is something now. And I think if the Players Association gets involved and somebody gets fined, this could be something that lingers on for months. Like, just imagine the AEW one with CM Punk and the Elite and Kenny Omega getting bitten. If that was caught on video, the amount of people that would be fucking going nuts right now on Twitter. This is a similar situation.
Well, it's funny you say that, because when I first heard about the pool and Green and, like, you know, the whole fight, I was like, oh, this is probably like a verbal thing. And then I see the video and I'm like, oh shit, this guy knocked him out. This is completely different now. This is escalated to a whole other level. I never thought it would. So it sucks. Cause, like, again, it's Draymond Green. He has this is like his, you know, it's his identity. And he has a pod, like, that to me is the biggest. He has a podcast. What's he going to do now? He's going to go out and, like, be like, yeah, Jordan Poole did this. Like, regardless, it's not a good look. So I can't believe I'm saying this, man. Draymond Green right now, man, he's always been the villain. But right now, man, he's got a huge target on him.
For sure. And just speaking of battles and fights, perfect transition, Extreme Rules, where there's going to be a truculent battle.
Are great today.
There's going to be Sheamus and Gunther picking up where they left off last night. They went to war. It looked like Sheamus was going to win their Intercontinental title. Everyone in the arena was kind of pissed. They did Sheamus dirty there, but the heel went over tonight. It's all three of them going at it. So you got the Brawling Brutes taking on the Imperium. And I don't know what the hell this match is called, but it looks like it's a hardcore match. So a false count anywhere. What are you expecting out of this? And do you think this will top everything that Sheamus and Gunther have been involved in?
No, it's not going to top it. But I think this is where Pete Dunne might turn on Sheamus. Because, dude, you got to think about it. There's a lot of Sheamus is, like, dude, what is he? He's one of the biggest baby faces right now. His pops are outstanding. I think if you want to keep that momentum, you have Pete Dunne turn on him, and his baby face run continues, right? So I think it's better off if he turns on Sheamus and, you know, Imperium gets the win here. I think Walter's been built as that unstoppable leader, the guy that just, you know, he brings Imperium together, because we saw, due to what, 2 months ago, they were almost going to break up. So they're back. They're stronger than ever. Walter and Sheamus, I hope they get a lot. Like, I still think they get most of the spotlight in this match, but I think there's something fishy going on here. I think Pete Dunne, he's going to turn. He has a lot of history with Walter. I think he's going to turn on Sheamus here. And I think Imperium, hate to say it, I think they're going to get the win again.
Yeah, Pete Dunne, the little rascal. Fucking Butch, starting shit on backstage, even fighting his own teammates sometimes. Yeah. Like, we saw Triple H, what he's able to do there with some of his other NXT guys that he really liked and that were kind of committed, because a lot of them, they didn't go up to the main roster. They stuck the course. They even stayed longer than they really need to on NXT, and at least they're getting rewarded for that. Like, Ciampa's on the main roster now, and Gargano. Do you think Pete Dunne, if he turns on Sheamus, they have to really build him up to being a world title guy or Intercontinental Champ contender first and then turn? Or is it right now when we least expect it as a tag team?
I think right now it's when we least expect it. I think you like that surprise factor. Like, he's like, you look at his resume back in the day, he was incredible. Even when he was in the Royal Rumble, what, 2019, I think he was in the Rumble. It was the one Rollins won. People gave this guy a huge pop. Looked like he could be the future of the company. But, you know, there's so many factors. There's so many other superstars fighting for that spot. If he wants to, like, be that next up-and-coming guy, why not go up against and turn against one of the biggest baby faces right now? I mean, Sheamus is putting on banger after banger after banger every week. This is looking like Sheamus, dude. I can't believe I'm saying this, because you used to burn me the freaking tapes. This is looking like Sheamus from 10 years ago. 2012 Sheamus, where it was his year. He had the world title. Didn't lose much. Like, yeah, Sheamus is losing every match here and there, but he's putting on bangers every single match. I think this one, even if, let's say, Pete Dunne doesn't turn, I think eventually down the line, it's going to be a storyline where it's like, this guy's getting all the attention. I kind of don't like it. I haven't had any attention yet. Then he'll turn. Now, Alito, call me crazy. I could ask you this question. Do you see both of them turning on Sheamus and maybe starting a heel tag team? Or would you rather go with just Butch being the guy to turn?
No, I would like it. I think it would be something different. Like you said there, I like Sheamus right now as a babyface. It's going back to like a decade ago where everybody even used to go, just go on YouTube and look at some of the stuff Sheamus did on the independent scene and like FCW and coming up through ECW when they had that short-lived thing there. And it's something where, you know what, he took both these guys under his wing on the main roster, and if they both turn on him, it's just going to add more fuel to Sheamus's babyface run. So I see here it's called a Donnybrook match, whatever the fuck that means. But yeah, they're going to go at it. And I'd love to see it. Sheamus maybe going after both in like a handicap match, or he gets a partner to come back. Maybe he teams with Drew for a bit. Love to see that happen.
I love that, yeah.
Well, going on here, we have Bayley getting her chance there. And it looks like both factions are going to be involved. Like Asuka and Alexa Bliss, I guess they're kind of aligned with the champion Bianca Belair. But do you think this ladder match is a way to protect Bayley in a loss? Or do you think she actually gets a job done here and adds another title to the group?
I just hope they don't have her win the title, because like, it's too related to the bloodline. Like two factions having all the titles, I don't like that. I think Bianca's done a hell of a job, man. Like, she's been running it since Charlotte left for a bit, and I think we're going to get Charlotte versus Bianca at Mania. I think that's set in stone at this point. But again, I don't want to see Asuka or Bliss turn on her. I don't want to see Bayley win the title. I just think she's not ready. I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me on that, but I think Bianca somehow wins it here. Maybe the fans won't like it. I'm not really sure, but I think Bayley's title, like, I think she has to wait. Alito, call me crazy. I think it would be a much bigger deal if Bayley were to beat someone like Ronda Rousey for the title.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, like, it's kind of not a forced thing, but if Damage Control have all the titles, I do agree with you. It's kind of like the Bloodline where, like, just because they're a faction, they don't have to have every single title. Like, look at Imperium. You can have the dominant champ, like Gunther, for a bit, and the other two join in, and you know they're a tag team, but they don't need the titles yet. Eventually, they can work into that and have something down the line. It keeps things fresh, but you mentioned Ronda Rousey there, and she's going to get another crack at Liv Morgan, this time an Extreme Rules match. I guess, is this like a foregone conclusion that Ronda's going to win? Like, can you see her lose three times now to Liv Morgan?
No. I love Liv. I love the story. I love the babyface momentum that she's had. This is where it ends. I think they've been promoting Ronda quite a bit as a badass, you know, that breaks the rules, attacks the managers. It's kind of like the Man 2.0. Like, that's kind of how I'm seeing it. Like, they built, remember they used to, when they built Becky, you know, going after security and you know, doing all the badass stuff that Stone Cold used to do. I think they're kind of building that with Ronda here. I think Ronda would have a nice little program. And again, it's always better with Liv, I think, chasing than being the champion. And I think they're in a good spot regardless, man, on SmackDown. You have Shotzi Blackheart, who brought the tank back. I think if you want to maybe go a different approach, you have her go up against Ronda as well. I really like the dynamic of the women's division on SmackDown. I do think, though, this is Ronda's time. She had the kid. She's back. She's rolling. Give it to Ronda Rousey. I think it's her time.
And what do you do with Liv Morgan after this? Because I think this match, because it's an Extreme Rules match, and we saw when she faced Lacey Evans on SmackDown, they really showed that all of a sudden she's Jeff Hardy flying off the rope and going through tables on people and getting up like it's nothing. Is this going to be like a character change for her, or do you think this is just their way of protecting it and like this match is going to be an all-out war, but she's going to take the loss?
Yeah, I think they're protecting her for sure, man. I think she's going to take a lot more spots than Ronda, like maybe go through a table, jump off a ladder, like I don't know, do something wild. And I think the thing that sucks about me saying this is I don't know if a lot of people are, they believe that Liv is that good in the ring yet. So like you're going to have to do a lot of spots to maybe get her over against a girl like Ronda Rousey, who's already over. She has all the credibility, the resume just speaks for herself in the ring. She's one of the greatest ever, maybe not wrestling, but you know, UFC champion, all that. So Liv Morgan, in terms of maybe getting over, I think she has to do a little more extreme stuff. And dude, like, look what Jeff Hardy had to do in 2009 to get over. He had to go through tables. He had to go through ladders. He had to swanton 30 feet things just to get over. I think Liv Morgan might have a similar fate just to get over. But again, I do like what you said there. I think she's going to look more protected if she goes through a table, like willingly, like by herself, she jumps off it, goes through it, and then Ronda pins her. So I think regardless, dude, Liv had a hell of a run. I think it's coming to an end.
Yeah, I would just hate if they did like protect her run at least. Like, don't make her lose in like 2 minutes and be like, yeah, the other two matches were flukes, even though it's an Extreme Rules. She hit her with like a cane or something to start, and Ronda just pinned her or made her submit in 2 minutes. I think she deserves a lot more than that. I think this should be a longer match than usual, and maybe we'll help Ronda like look at the crowd and work the crowd even more. We'll test her even as a champion because she's so used to not having the crowd play into everything she does. I think this could be a good test for her. And going on to another match that has like two people that need a win, but one of them is going to unfortunately not get it. The strap match with Drew McIntyre, Karrion Kross. If Drew loses, do you think that damages him more than if Karrion Kross loses?
That's a good question. I do think Karrion Kross wins. I think he has more to... I think it's one of those situations, Alino, where like Drew just lost like one of the biggest matches of his career. Like that, like when he lost at Clash of the Castle, that was a big loss. Now, are you really going to have him lose again to a guy that... This is basically what... Is this like his debut pay-per-view match? Like, I don't remember the last time he had a pay-per-view match. So you have Scarlett Bordeaux in his corner. Probably going to be some foolery involved, but I don't know, man. Like, I'm just going to stick with Karrion Kross just because he's new. It's a fresh type of guy here. just like, what does this mean for Drew moving forward though? Like, if he loses, like, I don't want him to go down to the intercontinental scene. Like, are we going to see Gunther versus Drew? Like, that's maybe the only thing that can maybe benefit from this. Like, let's say Drew loses and goes on against Gunther, but I don't know. Like, is Karrion Kross really like a main event type of guy?
I think with him coming back, like, Triple H, I think, always had him in mind there. Like, on NXT, I know him and Keith Lee would have those matches, and Karrion Kross wins a title, gets injured, and then they had him with Adam Cole, and didn't really work well on the mic because Adam Cole, like, just completely buried him there. And Karrion Kross goes on the main roster, loses to Jeff Hardy. No shame in that. It's just there was no build-up, and it kind of looked like he was getting thrown out the door, and now he comes back. I think they have to make him a big deal and get him the win. But like you said, like, Drew McIntyre, what's the end game here after this? That's two big matches he loses. And does he turn heel? Like, I don't know what can save him there.
I don't think I would turn him heel. If you turn him heel, he's going up against his buddy again in Sheamus. But like, we've seen that so many times. I don't know if the fans would really like that, but out of all the matches on this card, dude, like, that's the one for me that might have the biggest, like, long-term booking is the strap match, which is hilarious. But I think that actually might be the case.
And speaking of long-term, it seems like this feud in some way or form or fashion has been going on longer term than we even wanted to see. Edge versus Finn Balor, the Judgment Day. I think this is their first one-on-one match, but they've been in so many tag matches together where it doesn't really seem that special. But an I Quit match, like, what do they do with the Judgment Day? Like, I think they need the win, but Edge already kind of lost his momentum with the Dominic match. Like, is there a way out of this that's going to protect them?
I mean, shit. No, like, this is another one. They back themselves in a corner. I think Edge wins this match, but I don't know. Like, dude, I can't see Edge saying I quit. I can't. I just can't. I can't see it. Unless, like, I don't know. Unless, like, Beth Phoenix is there and, like, they threaten to, like, put her through, like, a table or, like, I don't know, really hurt her. But, like, I don't know. Like, I see Finn losing this. And I don't even know if it takes a lot of, like, you know, credit off of the Judgment Day. They've been heavily featured every week, and, you know, Dominic and Ray have their own little thing, and Damian Priest and Edge had their feud, and now it's looking like AJ and Finn might have something down the line. But I don't know, man. Like, do you see AJ maybe joining Judgment Day? Because there's been a lot of times on Raw where Finn has had a lot of opportunity to almost end his career, and he's like, I'm your friend, I'm your only friend. So what do you think about that? Do you see AJ maybe getting involved in this?
Can you imagine? So everybody Edge was targeting when him and Priest went together, like Finn Balor, AJ, Dominic, Ray, and then everybody turns on Edge and joins the Judgment Day. So it's like, yeah, we want to join the Judgment Day, but we don't want Edge involved, even though he's the one that was attacking us and trying to recruit us. So I think it would be interesting if AJ did it. It would change, like, the dynamic. It would change his character even. Maybe he brings back, like, some of his late TNA stuff when he was like the lone wolf kind of guy. But do you see, if Edge were to get the win here, does that make this match have another like feud down the line? Like, the last of Edge versus Judgment Day, or even the group together?
I mean, like, I don't even know who Edge is going to face, man. Like, this is a guy where he's back, he's loaded, he's looking in fantastic shape. Do Edge versus, like, do you do, like, Edge in a team versus Judgment Day? Do you do Edge versus Finn? Do you do Edge versus AJ again? Like, we saw that at Mania. Like, I don't know, man. Like, this is, you said it perfectly. Like, what the hell happens after this match? Is this, like, a one and done? Does Edge take a break? I don't know, man. Like, to me, this is, I think this might be the main event. I don't know. It's between that and the Fight Pit, but I'm really intrigued with this one too, specifically in the fact that long-term booking, what does this mean for specifically Edge being back? And what does it mean for a guy like Finn Balor, man, who, like, it seems like he's second fiddle to Rhea at this point, man. Like, they got to do something with Finn. I think maybe, like, win the U.S. title, maybe from Bobby at some point, maybe, you know, elevate it with the Judgment Day, make him go on that unstoppable run. But I don't know, man. It's tough. I don't really know what to say with this I Quit match. I'm just going to say Edge wins. Fuck it. Edge wins.
Well, speaking of those two matches, I think would be a nice way to bring somebody back who's kind of been teasing through videos and QR codes. Bray Wyatt, The Fiend. I don't know if it's The Fiend or Bray, but if Bray Wyatt comes back, do you insert him in the Edge and Judgment Day feud, or do you bring him out for Drew McIntyre and Karrion Kross?
Oh man. I assume he'd be the heel. So maybe Drew, that'd probably make more sense, but that'd be awesome seeing Edge versus The Fiend. Like the mind games and the promo work would just be absolutely incredible. But the thing is, would The Fiend make Edge quit?
That'd be interesting.
Like, I don't know. Like there's so much. You have to bring him back at this pay-per-view. You can't wait till November. You can't wait till Raw, because that's not big enough. So like tonight's the night. He's coming back. I don't know how he's coming back. If it's in a strap match, I feel like that's underwhelming. So, like, all eyes point to the I Quit match. I think it's going to be Edge, man. And maybe, hey, is he the leader of Judgment Day?
Oh, yeah, that would be a nice little swerve. Like, really, everybody thinks Edge was a leader, but it's Bray Wyatt playing all the mind games and really recruiting everybody and using Edge. I think that would be a nice one. And there's also Bray Wyatt as Eric Rowan. Braun Strowman's already there, but we haven't seen Rowan involved anywhere. So
I know.
Do you think this could be a way to bring back the whole Wyatt family, like those three guys?
Holy shit. Do it for Luke Harper, man. That'd be cool. Like I would be full on with that. But the thing is, they'd have to be faces. They can't be heels at that point. But I'm intrigued with everything involved with Bray, man. Like, this is a guy that the WWE has missed for a while. He's a creative genius. So many different things he can do. If it's the Wyatt family, if it's Judgment Day, if it's going just straight against Edge, I think it's going to be a masterpiece. And do you see him coming out with a different mask, Galino, or do you think it's the same Fiend that we saw from 2019 SummerSlam?
Like the way they had these QR codes, like I thought maybe it would just be Bray Wyatt coming out like this, but the recent one that had the Let Me In thing, I think we'll see like an altered Fiend mask. Like I think there'll be some changes to it, but it sounds like, or even looks like, he's going to come out as a Fiend. So do you think that's kind of like, would you bring him out like as Bray Wyatt like this, or do you think he needs to be the Fiend when he comes back?
I think, like you said perfectly, I think it depends on which match it's in. If it's Drew and Karrion Kross where the lights are red and all that, I think the Fiend comes out. But if it's maybe Edge and Finn Balor, you could intrigue the fans where it's Bray Wyatt. And it's like, oh, well, it's Bray Wyatt. What side is he on? Is he a face or is he a heel? And then all of a sudden, bam, he attacks fucking Edge. And it's like, oh, shit, we got Bray Wyatt back as that heel. And he bows and he does this in front of the Judgment Day to close the show. That'd be unreal.
Can you imagine if he just comes out as Firefly Funhouse Bray this whole time, all these codes? He just comes to the ring and waves at Edge. Hi, Edge. And then Rambling Rabbit comes. And then that's it, like nothing. They built that all up for just Firefly Funhouse Bray.
No, Triple H wouldn't do that. Vince would do that. Triple H would not do that. Don't see it.
Another match here. I think it will probably be the main event, just because like the storyline and everything involved, how they kind of built it up as this personal thing. Seth Rollins taking on Matt Riddle in the Fight Pit with Daniel Cormier, special guest referee. Do you think this is Seth's time to get the big win, or do you have Matt Riddle coming out on top?
I got Matt Riddle winning, man. Fuck. I just think he made it too personal, Seth, talking about, oh, wait, you can't see your kids anymore. I love that. I love this Seth Rollins. I think regardless, man, he's in it. Like, face or heel, he's over. Like, people cheer him every damn time he steps out there. We saw at Clash of the Castle, that match was phenomenal. Seth playing mind games, going for the punt, doing the DDT, just playing with Riddle. I think Riddle's going to be an absolute animal in this match. He has the experience in the fight pit. He's coming from a UFC MMA background. Cormier is a special guest referee. I'm going with Matt Riddle, man. I think Seth, the cards are too, they're stacked against him too much. And I think there's something big happening after this match is over.
Yeah, the reason why I wasn't seeing like a Bray Wyatt coming over in this, even though it kind of makes sense if you went after Seth, but Brock Lesnar off the farm. And the reason I think that, actually, I think no one wins this match. I think this is going to be something where Brock comes out, attacks everybody, and it's going to lead to a Hell in a Cell at the Crown Jewel with Seth and Riddle, how they can get another match out of it. And it will lead to Brock Lesnar, Daniel Cormier as a way to protect everyone. But the thing is with that, if it ends in a no contest, you think people will be mad at the pay-per-view in general? That, like, okay, this big match didn't end with a win? Or do you think Brock Lesnar coming back off the farm would be enough to make the fans go home happy?
Oh, man. We've seen so many times no contests are not good. Never ends good. I'll say no. I'll say this has to end. There has to be a result, Alino. Like, so many times we've seen these guys brawl on Raw. Like, how many times have we seen these guys throw hands, security come out? I just think, like, this needs a result, and I hope it is Riddle coming on top. I think Riddle needs it more because, when Cody Rhodes comes back, that's just another lane for Seth to kind of insert himself in the main event. I think Riddle needs to earn his spot a little more, and I think him beating Rollins with Randy Orton coming back, maybe 2023, we might be seeing Randy Orton versus Matt Riddle in a semi-main event type of match. I think regardless, Alino, moving forward, you have Riddle and Rollins. They're both sub-main event guys. I know Rollins is more the main event guy, but I think with Roman Reigns there, with The Rock potentially coming back, Cody Rhodes might be a step ahead of Seth in the title plans. I think these two guys are just, they're evenly matched. I love the way this feud has been for, 3 months now? I just think if Brock does come back, he's got all his eyes set on that freaking ref right there. He's going to go right after him. He's going to attack him. I do say, though, I think he would F5 Seth Rollins.
Well, the final thing here that I'll bring up, because I think they'll probably do something somewhere on the show. It's the Miz's birthday. I saw on Twitter. Turns 42 today, so I feel old now.
Holy shit.
Him and Dexter Lumis have had this story going on for a long time, and Dexter Lumis is like always stalking the Miz and taking him, like bringing him, kidnapping him. And do you think that there's going to be a nice birthday surprise for the Miz tonight with Dexter Lumis giving one more attacking kidnapping?
I would love that. His 42nd birthday is him getting kidnapped. I love Dexter Lumis, man. He intrigues the shit out of me. Like, is he a face? Is he a heel? What the hell is going on here? Because I see Dexter Lumis, dude. Like, I can't do it. Like, The Miz as an actor is incredible. Like, he's a great worker. He brings the passion. I think, dude, give The Miz one more face run and see what he could do. But Dexter, like, dude, like, that's my biggest thing. He's in an Oilers jersey. What, like, is Lumis a heel or face, Alino? Like, let me know, because I need clarification. I have no idea who the face or the heel is here. And if The Miz is the heel, the guy's already over. Just make him the face. Fuck. Make these two a tag team.
I like it. Well, on that note, Chris, this was a fun episode. Extreme Rules tonight. Talked a little hockey. Draymond Green. Hope everyone enjoyed this. We'll be back next week.